annual basis provide data which you can monitor their income gap, productivity growth levels, and overall levels of economic freedom. We think once and for all it's important for that data to be consistent, and so that New Zealanders can actually track with transparency the success that the government is having in that area. In relation to the Regulatory Standards Bill, that's a continuation of the work undertaken previously by Rodney Hyde and John Biscow. And in relation to that work, there's certain things that we are agreeing. One is to put in legislation around how regulation can be formed, both the quantity and quality of that regulation. We're going to use the formula that was the preferred option from Treasury, which is their option 5. As I say, we think it's likely to lead to a reduction in regulation, which is a good thing. Where it's been applied to the Transport Agency, for instance, recently, we see a significant reduction in the amount of regulation, so that's a good thing. But we are rejecting the proposition that ACT had previously campaigned and talked about, which was being able to apply to the courts for declarations around the breach of things like property rights. We think that was workable. In terms of the legislated spending caps, that's a new initiative that we've agreed, so the Minister of Finance is very keen to work with the ACT Party for that. That will see a change to the Public Finance Act, and will see us legislating for core Crown expenses to be only increased at the rate of population and inflation. There are exemptions to that for natural disasters, for automatic stabilisers like the unemployment benefit, various other things that will allow us allow an exemption. In the event that there is a breach of the spending cap, then the Minister of Finance will be required to explain to Parliament why that has occurred and what actions he or she has taken to address that issue. I think that's important. In the areas of the Resource Management Act and education, we're very keen to work together. I'll leave John to talk a bit more about that. But one thing I'll say about education, both parties are keen to explore a new concept around schooling called charter schooling. We think charter schooling can really deliver tremendous results for underprivileged children. It will effectively allow all of the flexibility of integrated schooling, but in a publicly funded environment, which can also take in resources from the private sector. In areas like welfare and ACC, we'll be continuing to work very heavily together. There are big areas of reform for the government over the next 3 years. So we think it's going to be an exciting three-year period. We're looking very much forward to working with John and the ACT Party. And just pass over to you. Thanks, thank you.
Thank you very much. We campaigned, the ACT Party campaigned, that John Key would be re-elected as Prime Minister, and we would be significant and valuable coalition partners to that cause. So I'd like to thank my own lead team for the negotiations that have gone on incrementally over the last 7 days, in particular John Viscowen and Catherine Isaac. I made a conscious decision about 7 days ago that I would put John Biscowen and Catherine Isaac in front of the officials to do much of the backroom negotiations because of their ACT credentials. We see it as very important to the membership of the ACT Party and to people that we want to support us in 2014 that the philosophical platform of the origins of the ACT Party stay intact around choice and freedom and responsibility. The philosophy, concepts and principles of the National Party fit pretty well with the ACT Party, and we want to make sure over the next 3 years that we could put some steel into the reinforcing platform of the National Party policy initiatives. And consequently, we negotiated as hard as we could for as long as we could, with about 153 iterations of this particular document over the last 7 days to get where we have arrived. We are pleased to be where we are at today with this document because we see three streams of work that have been important to Rodney Hyde and the ACT Court Caucus over the last 3 and 6 years. And that is the continuation of the 2025 Task Force work, the regulatory standards bill and the legislated spending limits bill before the select committee. I said to the Prime Minister about a week ago that I wasn't really that much interested in coming here and promoting bills inside a select committee structure that weren't going to see the light of day, and I invited the Prime Minister and his officials to tell me just where they disagree with the ACT Party on these bills, and where were the sticking points and how we could progress them in short work, in particular the regulatory standards bill and preferred option by the Treasury, option 5, to be implemented in the next 12 months. So I wanted to make sure that in the next 3 years, notwithstanding the smallness of the caucus, that there'd be no arguments in the ACT caucus about progress that we were making, because we were going to make progress on the basis of what we were going to bolt down inside this confidence and supply agreement. I also acknowledge the presence of the ACT Party President, Chris Simmons, representing the ACT Party Board, and I want to thank the Prime Minister for the work that his people have done. We see significant changes needed to the Resource Management Act, and we've got some progress around that. We also see education as the key to this country's future. We clearly understand that there is too much social deprivation. We worry about the yawning gap between the haves and the have-nots. I have been a have-not. I'm arguably a have today and blessed with some of the things that I want all New Zealanders to enjoy, particularly those who struggle to make ends meet. The average wage of a New Zealander living in Kaikohe, near where the constituency I used to represent, is $14,000. And when making decisions over the next 3 years, I'm going to think about individuals and families in that small settlement of rural New Zealand that need to be looked after in every step of the way of the next John Key-led government. I want to make sure that every young New Zealander has the opportunities that I have had. And that is why I'm particularly pleased to be doing a role in education and working with the charter schools. The model that I think works very well in Greater Auckland is, for instance, Beards Road Intermediate and Onehunga Business Secondary School. So I'm looking forward to working with the Minister of Education on that. 30,000 kids every single day of the week are not going to school, and we must reach out and make school relevant for young people and make sure that school also interfaces with the workplace so there are job opportunities for young people when they are and during their education. The welfare and ACC reforms that the government has on its plate, we support. There's some matters at the margins that we would like to make sure work, and that's the National Act agreed to introduce competition for ACC's work account. We see that as pretty significant and a good win. I'm very pleased to have the ministerial responsibilities that have been given to me. I have worked in social area portfolios before, but I campaigned on investment, growth and jobs, economic prosperity for all New Zealanders, and maintaining and our economic sovereignty. So I'm very pleased to be working in a sector of government that clearly represents the 500,000 New Zealanders that employ less than 10 people and are out there every single day of the week, giving life their best shot, employing people, paying taxes and making the country successful. And I'm looking forward to working with them. So I just want to say finally, I agree to the matters here in the document. There's a lot of work to be done by this new government over the next 100 days. We want to make sure that the government has the support it needs to get out and implement the 100-day policy initiatives that they have campaigned on. So the ACT Party is pleased with this outcome. Given our numbers here in the Parliament, we think that the negotiations have been fair to us. We've maintained our values base. We haven't sacrificed any of that. And for people that support the ACT Party and have done over the last 16 years will clearly understand that the ACT Party, what it stands for and what it stands against, is intact, and we propose to promote that over the next 3 years without fear or favour.
So, Prime Minister, will there be a disaster spending cap on government spending?
Yeah, so core crown expenditure will be able to rise by the population and inflation increase of every given year, but outside of that, any increase in expenditure would see the Minister of Finance having to go to the Parliament and explain why that's taking place.
So that's within the
expenditure
as a whole, not
by more than 5%. No. Overall core crown expenditure. So the aim here is, if you think about what we've been doing, since we've been in government over the last 3 years, we've been trying to drag back that curve to get to a more normalised level of expenditure. And we think once GDP starts rising, we'll be in that shape. And what we're saying from here on in is that, yes, governments have a legitimate role to increase expenditure, recognising a bigger population or inflation costs, or if there's some extraordinary item like an earthquake or whatever it might be, but rapid increases in government expenditure over and above the population or inflation rate would need to be justified to the Parliament, and in our view they're not justified.
What was Treasury's
advice has been to the Minister of Finance, very keen to update the Public Finance Act. Their view is that there's the need for transparency. So if you think about what's happened in the last 4 or 5 years of the previous Labor government, they increased expenditure by about 50%, so it was a very large increase. You might remember when Michael Cullen came in as Minister of Finance in 1999, from there to the 2002 period, he had an agreed $1 billion new budget spending increase that he committed to each and every year. He only lasted 3 years of that, completely abandoned it, and then went crazy with the checkbook. And we've spent the last 3 years trying to rein those programs in. So this is a much better way.
This was in the last agreement, wasn't it?
No. What was in the last agreement was a basically different deal. It was the public veto, essentially the Colorado-type system, which would mean that you couldn't breach the cap. In this case, you can breach, but you need to explain. And there was a public veto, and the problem with the public veto, and the reason why I've been previously very opposed, is because, as you've seen in places like California, the public will vote for any spending increase, but they won't vote for any tax increase, and that's effectively bankrupted California. This is quite different.
How much of a cap is it? Because you can commit a sin as long as you explain the sin.
Yeah, but you've got to go into the Parliament and A, explain that you're going above that cap. You've also got to explain that what you're doing to get back inside that cap. And, yep, like a Bill of Rights, NOPA, you can ultimately breach the Bill of Rights and say, well, I'm doing it and these are the reasons I'm doing it. But at least the public are in a better position than they were prior to this agreement with ACT, because they'll know that the government's on a trajectory of substantially lifting government expenditure.
The ACT Party believes that you cannot have a six-year cycle like we experienced before the national government that has economic growth of 20% and government expenditure of 42%. The ACT Party believes that individuals can spend their money much better than politicians, and consequently we want to make sure that we get value for money, leave more money in people's pockets so they can reinvest and create more wealth and jobs and prosperity for the country.
So what's the starting point? Accepting several ministerial positions yourself?
Well, I don't see any irony in me reaching the age of superannuation this week and saying thank you but no thank you, because the ACT Party policy is that we think national superannuation should be increased to 67. So I don't see any irony in that. But what I do see is an opportunity in small business. I don't think there are too many people in this Parliament that have had 45 years experience in employing people in small business who clearly understand, as I do, how difficult it is every single day of the week to be in a small enterprise employing people and trying to make a profit. And I'm going to be very watchful of all government expenditure. I'm going to have plenty to say about government expenditure and the cost of government as it affects small enterprises.
So the starting point for the spending cap
2012? Yeah, it'll be when the legislation is introduced. So we've given a 2-year period to update the Public Finance Act, but hopefully we'll be able to do that sooner. It'll be whatever that starting point is.
So how would you see it affecting the current $800 million cap
you
have on your spending?
Well, that actually helps us. I'll just sort of track that we've had a look so far that's sort of underneath that at the moment. But obviously it depends on what the inflation rate is and what population increases. But on the current modelling we've done, we'd be under the cap at the moment. And likely to be under the cap. Well, you have to ask the Minister of Finance, but his advice to me is that we're likely to be under the cap for a significant period of time, because we've been growing government expenditure at quite a low rate. It was 0% this year, so no increase in the budget, and relatively low at $800 million a year for the next 2 years.
So it's like that $800 million is likely to fit the parameters.
It definitely fits the parameters, yeah.
So have no effect on your government, and if they Labour government came in, they could ditch it, and would have no effect
on it? Yep, the Labour government or any future parliament can change any rules or legislation. We can't bind a future parliament, but that future government would need to go into parliament and explain to New Zealanders why they no longer want to be bound by a spending cap, which would be greater than, you know, essentially they'd be saying they're going to spend more money than the population increase and the inflation increase.
How does this agreement, Mr. Banks, reflect on the Act's position to get government spending back to 2005 levels?
Well, we lament the day that the government expenditure incrementally increased in the last 3 years of the Helen Clark government and substantially, as I indicated before. The Act Party believes that there is a long way to go for this government to deliver on a sensible level of government expenditure, and we'll be watching every piece of government legislation and government expenditure as it relates to the next budget and going forward to make sure that taxpayers who are funding all of this are getting value for money, and that there's every opportunity for businesses to grow and employ people and produce wealth and pay our way in this world. The ACT Party is more than a little bit worried about the global economic crisis that is coming our way, particularly we think in first quarter next year, and we want to make sure that every single piece of spending, line by line and dollar by dollar, is well accounted for. And I'm going to hold the government feet to the fire on that, and I think I should.
The other thing is, I can't tell you exactly when, because I've gone and looked at the budget documents, but if you go and have a look at that or the prefu, you'll see that we do get back to 2005 budgets, you know, percentage of GDP spending ratios. Can't exactly remember when this is, in a few years' time, but that's the pathway we're on. But we're on the pathway to go below that.
Treasury today has just revised down its growth forecasts in the last couple of hours, though, so that could be a lot harder getting there. And
At the margins, so did the OECD, but it's all relatively speaking at the margins, still reasonable growth rates.
But revised down to 3.4 to 3%, it's quite, for the year to March 2013, it's quite a big revision.
Firstly they forecast, so let's all see how it ultimately goes, but then it's not overly dramatic.
Mr. Banks, given that they took such a drubbing at the last election, 1.1%, do you think you're in a pretty fortunate position now to be laying down any sort of law to John Key in the next part?
Well, I think a lot of the parliamentarians coming in will think they're a bit unfortunate to have me back. I remember this caucus room well. I have said many times that a week out from the election we were written off, and picking up party votes across the country at that point was always going to be a challenge, and on election day it was. But that is the past. The future now is for me to represent alongside the National Party and the other minor parties in the Parliament the values of the ACT Party, and interpret that in all policy, in particular economic and commercial policy as it associates with my ministerial responsibilities, and then next election make sure that the ACT Party has a number of like-minded people in here to give me some support in the caucus.
Can I ask you about charter schools? Is there the ability in this for the private sector or businesses to take over state schools, management of state schools?
Yeah, so the way we would see it working is, if you think about it at the moment, if you're in independent school, you have freedom around the curriculum, around all of the operating hours, different facets of daily life of a school, and in return for that you get very limited government funding. In the case of a state school, you're bound completely by all the rules set through the Education Act. What we're trying to do is say, look, we think there's an opportunity to have greater choice where the characteristics of an independent school are applied to a school that's primarily in the state sector. So most of the funding will probably come from the state, but not necessarily all of it. That may allow, for instance, exactly the point you're making, the takeover of a public school. Those facilities could be used. As we've indicated in the document, we think for underprivileged kids in at-risk communities, this could work particularly well. There's a failing school where this model may work quite well. And we intend to trial it and work our way through it. But we think it will allow, over time, much greater choice for families that otherwise are locked out from choice.
And how will parents decide
that? Yeah, I mean, so ultimately the government would have to determine whether a school could become a charter school, and we'll need to work our way through that process of which schools would apply and which wouldn't. And it's it's an evolving process. We're going to trial that, so it'll be start off quite slowly, I would have thought. But I think over time you can see a new category of schooling away from a full state school, an integrated school, and an independent school.
And you could have performance pay for teachers in a charter school.
I think, taken to its extreme, yes, all of those things would be possible. Yep.
What would this trial look like? How many schools have you tested out and when will that start?
None of that work's been done yet. The proposition was brought to us by the ACT Party, although we've had ongoing discussions over the last 3 years about choice and freedom in the education system, so we'll need to work through those details. But it will start slowly. There will be some cost, and we'll need to work through that. But we like that concept of giving some great opportunities.
So this could be private business sponsoring state schools, essentially?
Yes. So potentially, you have a situation where you have significant amount of state funding going in, maybe some funding coming from iwi or some funding coming from a company or funding coming from a trust, and the combination of the two allowing the charter school to operate.
Just away from these deals that you've about, how confident are you about the Māori Party on board, say, next week on a splash?
I'm very confident. Look, I think where it's progressing now, we had a very constructive discussion and meeting with them again in Auckland yesterday. We're making good progress. They're going around the country now, holding the hui, talking to their members about the options on the table, and those options, as I understand, will range from accepting a deal with the National Party right through to rejection and going into opposition. They feel as though they'll be in a position to give us some indication of that by probably the weekend, and we'd like to progress reasonably quickly if we can. But
is your feeling that they're going to sign up again?
That would be my sense. I mean, look, again, we think we've worked very constructively with them on the deal. I wouldn't want to speak for their members. That's a matter for them to decide whether they think it's beneficial. But my personal view, you achieve very little in opposition. And if you think about the Māori Party, 3 members, they've been a rather cluttered environment of opposition with, Labour, the Greens, New Zealand First and Mana. And frankly, I find it impossible to believe that they would make more gains in opposition than they would in government with us. The basis of the agreement, while I'm not in a position to go through it today, is different to this one, in so much it gives them more flexibility, simply by nature of the fact that, look, I think it's fair to say that ACT and United have much more in common with National than the Māori Party have, and we certainly don't want to completely undermine the Māori Party.
More flexibility to oppose, but still to vote for, yes.
And that would be consistent with what you saw over the 2008 to 2011 period. So you remember in the previous parliament, our confidence in supply agreements with ACT and United bound them to the 100-day programme. These agreements today bind them to the action plan, effectively the same thing. In the previous parliament, the Māori Party were not bound by the 100-day programme, and frankly, I wouldn't see them being bound by the action plan.
So would you hold on to the government general until the Māori Party come back with their decision? And then would you go GG maybe Monday, or would you wait for the leadership voting on Friday?
Look, we could go to the Governor General today, although obviously we don't know the specials, but we're very confident that at worst we'll lose one and no more than one. But my expectation is I'll try and get a decision out of the Māori Party in the weekend, then go to the Governor General. By then we'll know the specials anyway. Go to the Governor General, potentially be in a position to swear in the executive in the very early part of next week.
And
How does a co-leadership change affect the allocation of any ministerial responsibility?
Well, that'll ultimately be a matter for them, and as we found with the previous agreements we had a position where while we accept the constitutional reality, which is a minister serves at the pleasure of the Prime Minister and with the confidence of the Prime Minister, I think it would be fair to say that I have confidence in all three members of the Māori Party. So in principle, any of those names would be acceptable to us. So that would be a matter for them. It's not the situation I found myself in where I just didn't think I could have a working relationship with Roger Douglas because I thought the gap in where we could see eye to eye was so great it wouldn't have been constructive.
So a ministerial role is not necessarily limited to the co-leaders of Māori Party?
Not necessarily, although let's just sort of see how that document goes.
Mr. Banks, you said, I think, that Catherine Isaac had been on the negotiating team.
Yes.
What's her standing in the party now? What's happened with the leadership?
She was a former president and a personal friend of mine. And I was absolutely committed to the changes in education that we've talked about today with the charter schools. And Catherine Isaac has a real focus around ACC and welfare reform, and quite a good knowledge of that, having worked on some of the committees. And I wanted to make sure that her social perspective of the New Zealand economy going forward was represented in the ACT sense, and her credentials as an ACT member were impeccable. So I invited John Biscowen and her to lead the negotiations at officials level. And we've got some really good attachment here on the charter schools, and I'm going to be talking to her about just how we progress all of that quite quickly, because I see education as critical to this country's future and absolutely necessary to close that yawning gap I talk about between the haves and the have-nots.
Who's the leader of the party, Mr.
Chris Simmons is the leader of the party. He is the president of the party and acting leader of the party, and I'm the parliamentary leader.
Will that change? No, it has to change.
I'm not. I never came to the ACT Party or to this equation or this day with a view of being the leader of the ACT Party. There is a huge amount of work to be done across the country in rejuvenating the ACT Party around what we have stood for and stood out for a long time. And I want to reach out and embrace as many people as I can to form that small army of disciples that will need to build a party so that we can see this man re-elected Prime Minister in 3 years' time.
So you're saying that the situation will not change, it'll stay?
Well, the situation could change, but I have got so much on my plate at the moment, plenty to chew off. The days are getting longer and the years are getting shorter for me, and I just want to make sure that what I've come here to deliver and what I've been invited to do, I get on my bike and get cracking. Well, the leader doesn't, in my view, the leader does not have to be in the parliament. The parliamentary leader does, of course. And I've had a caucus meeting and reaffirmed myself as parliamentary leader of the ACT Party. There's quite a lot of debate, but that was sorted out, and I'm grateful for that. But there are matters that we need to discuss. I mean, this is MMP. This is an MMP document. This is an MMP situation. And we've got to make sure that if we're going to be relevant in 2014, and if we're going to make sure that we have centre-right government in 3 years from today, then the ACT Party has to do very well in whatever shape or form it rejuvenates itself and goes out and presents to the public of New Zealand. But one thing's for sure, the free market values and the disciplines of the ACT Party, underpinned by its long-held policies, fundamentally won't change in the direction we're going. But we've got a lot of work to do. I mean, anyone in the party could become leader if they want. But these are matters for the president and for the board, and not for me today. I've got plenty to get on with.
Mr. Beaton, I'd just ask about ACC. Could ACC get out of the
word count
business altogether?
No, that's not the intention for National. One area of disagreement between the two parties is ACT's position is they would like to see ACC exit fully from, for instance, the work account and other accounts. National's view is that ACC needs to be retained, but there is the opportunity for increased competition, either through the extension of the accredited employment program or through potentially other private sector providers coming in and competing alongside ACC. But our view is that ACC has to remain.
Sorry, just on the economy quickly, there has been quite a lot of bad news in the last couple of weeks, and the NZIDR forecasts are showing no government surplus for 5 years. I mean, at what point do you reassess?
Well, NZIER have been at the negative end of forecasting for quite some time now. And look, at the end of the day,
Treasury's getting closer and closer down.
Well, Treasury's still quite a long way from NZIER. But my basic point would be, look, forecasts are wonderful things and they are a prediction of what may or may not occur. We're the government, and so therefore we'll get on and run the operation as best we can. And that means being careful with how we spend money. It means trying to promote economic growth. I mean, over the weekend, you saw the US unemployment numbers dramatically improving. They've created quite a lot of jobs here in the last couple of months. So, yep, look, it might all go to hell in a handbasket. If it does, we'll manage it. But at the moment, we're a little bit more confident than others.
But it is looking harder to get to that surplus, surely. You'd have to squeeze spending considerably more too.
Well, let's wait and see. As I said, we'll react to circumstances we find ourselves in, but I think we're on a program that will lift economic performance in New Zealand. We'll see how it goes.
You've got that surplus on your action plan, though. Does that make a promise?
Yeah, well, we're committed to getting back to surplus by 2014-15. At the end of the day, if there's some catastrophe in Europe and the place melts down, that changes the global economic outlook. Well, there are always things that are beyond our control. But we are totally committed to try and get back to surplus. And I might point out that the year earlier, we're predicting a deficit of $1.5 billion. That's a very small deficit in the overall scheme of two very large numbers. And in my view, it's still possible that we could get back in surplus that year.
The Treasury is, in those forecasts that Alex was talking about, so it's not sort of down to the worst case scenario of having a $14.5 billion hole, but there will be a drop in their budget forecast. So that's going to make it difficult then to get into surplus because it's not a big surplus that you're looking at anyway.
Yeah, but I think it's important to understand, that is the forecast of what might happen, and it may well prove to be correct. I mean, for the most part, we have great faith in Treasury's forecasting within the bounds of reasonableness. But over the course of the last 10 years, pretty much they're out by a reasonable amount. That's just what happens. All I can tell you is I'm not a crystal ball gazer. What may happen over the next 2 or 3 years is something in the fullness of time we'll know. But all I can tell you is we're on the right track, at least, to getting New Zealand back into surplus as fast as we can. So maybe the situation will be better and maybe it'll be worse. Whatever happens, we'll take every day as it comes and react to it if required.
Have either of you been interviewed by the police?
Prime Minister, given those uncertainties, why would you limit your options by adopting a fiscal rule, the kind you've just signed up to?
Yeah, because we are, A, very confident we can meet that rule. I mean, the track that we are on is below the population inflation increase, so that's the first thing. The second thing is, if things really go badly and the international environment weakens and the government has less options available to us, while I haven't had extended discussions with the Minister of Finance, it's likely that the first port of call would be a reduction in the new budget spending allowance. Now, there's not a lot of money there, but that would be our first port of call. But in the end, all of us knew when we went on the campaign trail that the next 3 years would be difficult. That's why we argued for strong and stable government. We've got very strong and stable partners in ACT and United. And we're just going to get on and do the business.
Audrey, did you ask about what is it in relation to?
Tapes.
Oh, yes, I have been.
Oh, have you? What did they say?
Pardon?
And what happened?
Oh, I was just interviewed by the police from Wellington, and I made a statement, and I had to go to the Newmarket police station and have it witnessed. That's all. It was might have been a two-page, three-page statement, but nothing more, and that was 3 weeks ago. Haven't heard anything else.
Do you have an appointment scheduled?
Well, I've given a statement, but that I think Audrey said recently, that the statement I gave was the day I made the complaint or 2 days after I made the complaint, but since then I haven't had any discussions or any involvement with the police.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Ron.
Thank you.
Bradley.